Welcome to Empowered, Mind-Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up, spiral out. Welcome, everyone. Today we have Florian Hornick. Flow helps extraordinary people get in touch with their deeper mission and play a more meaningful game than they ever played. Flow lived a huge part of his life, seeking goals he thought were expected of him. He had a huge success. His first company at 21, years as an international headhunter, founding a tech company, just to mention a few. But the shift came when he chose to leave everything external and find his inner truth. I love his honesty in the questions he brings. We all feel it, but do we ever say it out loud? He says, what about when it becomes lonely and frustrating? When you feel lonely because you're around people that blame you for being different. When you feel incomplete, and when you feel like a misfit. He says finding the truth inside and that your biggest weakness is actually your strength. Let's see how this spirals out. Welcome, Flo.
Hello, Jane.
So good to have you on Empowered. And I understand you're on a boat. And what part of the world are you in now?
Well, I am in Italy, and in order not to totally confuse our listeners, I decided to jump off my boat, therefore we might have some other noise because I have my dog with me. So just in case, there's the dog. That's totally normal. It's mine.
Okay, I've got mine with me too. So who knows? We could have some barking.
Yeah.
So, Flo, where should we start? I love your story and finding your inner compass. And I love that it came through, you know, you were in the headhunting business, which helps people, big corporations, find the people they want to hire, right? But you must have found that people were seeking, and you just started to question what that was all about. But just tell us your story and how it all started.
Yeah, well, it is quite a journey, to be honest, it started as soon as I started thinking, because I was questioning the world and I was questioning myself as long as I can remember, and when I was a kid, and just to give you this as a little pre-frame. When I was a kid, I had dreams. I dreamed big. And people told me, teachers, parents, friends, they told me, Flo, this is not for you. Do something normal. First you go to school, then you go to university, then you get a real job. So I thought that I have to be successful in what I do. And first, I need to make some money. First, I basically need to live in a suit. And this was the headhunter job. I thought now I can prove to everybody else that I am successful, that I am somebody meaningful. And I thought that once I have done this, then I can finally do what I really want to do.
Right. So it was living, you know, other people's expectations, which we often do, don't we?
Do we? Yeah. Well, I found out that in my life and my friends and the people that I work with, most of them, they are living by other people's expectations. And this is most of the time that people come into my coaching is because they are torn apart between what they think that they should do and what they want to do. And right. They think they are not allowed to do what they want to do because this is not what is expected from them.
Right. So there's conflict.
Mm.
And I guess, you know, they worry, will we be able to make money? Will we be able to support our families if I do what I want to do, right?
Do you think that this is the real issue for not going for their own dreams?
I think it's a combination. I think it's like what you say, we're programmed to, you know, we're programmed since very young that this is what you do, A, B, C, right? And even though we have this inner calling, we're afraid to follow it because, like you say, we'll be misfits or different. And we're worried that we won't be supported in that, you know, that the money won't come that we think is so important.
Yeah. Going back to my headhunter business. I was working for an American-owned international headhunting company. And we were fine. So the sector that I was working in was international banks and real estate agents. And we were looking for head of finance, head of a certain country, whatever it was always a head of. What I was doing, I went to the companies and I listened to the person hiring. And then I called other people that I thought could be a good fit. And then I talked to them what they want to do. So would you have, or if you had told me as a kid that you can make money by doing nothing than just talking to people and then having the two finish the conversation. As a kid, I would not believe that this is a serious job. So you can tear apart most of the traditional jobs that we have nowadays. Most of them, to a kid, they don't seem to be like a good thing to make money. For a kid, you need to make something. So you sit down, you do something, you're working on something, you produce something, and in the end, you have something that you can give to somebody. For them, it's logical that then you receive some money. But all of our virtual jobs, they don't seem to be a natural job. And therefore, I don't think that it is the reason... Or the fear of not making money, which is holding us back. It is the expectation. If we had learned as kids that what it takes to make money is to be really good at something, then maybe we would have thought as kids, what do I love doing? What do I love so much that I'm better than other people?
Right. Exactly. In contributing your own special gift to the world, really.
Yes. Jane, and now you have to excuse me for 30 seconds. I have to let somebody out.
Okay. Go ahead.
That's when you have kids or animals in your life. And yeah.
Yes. I know all about it. I have 5 horses, 2 dogs, 2 cats, and 2 children.
And isn't that funny that we were just talking about a job and what the expectation of a job is, and our typical virtual jobs where most of our white collar workers, they go into an office and then they spend their days in meetings. For a kid which is not like pre-formatted by the society, it makes no sense that you have to leave, well, your dog at home, or that a kid is all of a sudden not allowed to talk because you are working. And I think we create totally artificial jobs. And for me, it was just the question, what will other people think of me? Will they think I'm a failure? Will they think I'm not getting a real job? Will they think that I'm not successful with what I'm doing? And I wanted to prove it to them so that I can, when I start doing what I really love, they say, yes, he's allowed to because he's so successful or he has been so successful before.
Yeah. Yeah. So first you could do this so that you could do that. Do you think our education system gets us into that hamster wheel as well? Like we're trained to become almost slaves to a something that we're not really in tune with.
Yeah, we are trained to fit in. And you mentioned in the very first sentence that you like how I talk about being a misfit. Somehow most of us are misfits because we are all individuals and we are all different. And when we are supposed to fit in the same job, well, it's obvious that we don't all fit in, but everybody is sticking out in a certain way. I felt like I'm not fitting in with anything. And when I realized during my headhunter days that it doesn't matter how successful the people are, and it doesn't matter how much money they earn, they have the same fears like me. I have a friend who has problems falling to sleep because he thinks that he's missing $2 million. So he has always that fear in his mind that he needs to create these $2 million. Now here comes the funny part. He's not in debt. He already has $2.5 million on his bank account, but he thinks he needs $4.5 million in order to live a happy life. So it doesn't matter whether you are poor or whether you are rich or whether you have some money or not. As long as you're thriving for money, you never have enough. There's a sentence from a friend of mine who runs theminimalists.com, and they say, you can never have enough of what you don't need in the first place.
Right?
Money is not, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Money is not something you need. It's what you can buy with the money that you think you need.
Yeah.
And when I talk to these successful people, they were often in a bad marriage. They were often sorry they didn't see their kids. They often totally didn't like the job. They often feared of leaving the job because the more they earned, the more they spent. So they had huge debt for their houses, for their cars, for their holiday homes. And they feared that if this is taken away, they will even lose their family because they haven't been nice to their family. They just comforted them with money. Right. And I realized, no, this is not where I want to end up. I already have the same fears now being in my 20s. I don't have to turn 58 to still have the same fears with just a shorter amount of time to live and more money to spend.
Yeah.
And so I realized back then that what I am really interested in is having these deep and meaningful conversations with people. And therefore, I wanted to become a coach. I had no idea how I'm going to do that. And everybody I told that, they said, Flo, to be a good coach, you need to have some gray hair. You can't be in your 20s. But nevertheless, I'm as a coach. And the more training I received, the better questions I asked. And all of a sudden, I had to ask these questions myself. And then I realized, well, I spent the last 15 years of my life trying to build a life that I don't want in the first place, so that when I finally have it, I can live the life I love. And I did not know what that would look like.
Yeah. So brave. You know, so many continue on until they can retire to do that. And then do they have their health? Do they have their family?
No, I'm not brave. I'm just weak.
Yeah.
I did not have the bravery to fight through. Yeah. I live off passion, emotion, love, laughter. I want to love my life. I want to love what I'm doing, and I did not. So it was wearing me out. And this wasn't a brave decision. It was collapsing, because I couldn't handle my daily life because I did not know what for. And it took another 5 to 10 years to find out.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I was going to add, I had an interview with someone in the entertainment business, and and he describes the same thing in, you know, in stars in Hollywood, and they seek always being in the public eye and popular and work really hard at not being the misfit, right? But in the end, that wears them down too. Mm-hmm. So it all, you know, it's all the same. It's looking for that, you know, that the comfort in thinking that other people, that you're doing what other people want, right? So so now that you're here, what's your message?
What my message is?
Yeah. Like you say too that positive motivation is stronger and more inspiring than avoiding and escaping.
A coach of mine, maybe one of the other knows him, Mike Mandel from Toronto, Canada, one of the greatest living hypnotists. This doesn't happen often to me. I lost my point.
So he's a hypnotist. He's in Toronto.
Yes, but what was your question?
Well, that you say that positive motivation is stronger and more inspiring than avoiding
yes,
and escaping.
There we go. Thank you. there we go. By the way, for anybody listening, if you ever lose track of what you were thinking before, that the reason for that is that we have different ego states, and most people know this, because sometimes you see somebody say, oh, you are in a terrible state, or you are in a wonderful state. And we have these ego states, and they can switch within a second. And sometimes they are anchored to a certain situation or a certain room or a certain behavior. And once you change this, all of a sudden you forget. And when you go back to where you had the thought and do the same thing, very often you switch in the same ego state again, and there we go. And by you repeating the question, it brought me in the same situation that I knew. Yes, what I wanted to say is that that Mike points out over and over and over again in his coachings that the list of what you don't want is infinite. Maybe you don't want to get cancer. You don't want to have your leg amputated. You don't want to die young. You don't want to open a restaurant on Mars. You don't, I mean, you can, most of the things you don't want. So if we focus on what we don't want, our energy, our brain capacity is very often filled with that nonsense because, well, you don't want it anyway. So by shifting towards what you really want, you're activating your inner watchdog. When anybody of you ever bought something new, a new car or a new home, all of a sudden you see the same items around you and you have noticed them before. That's because our brain has only a certain capacity to process information actively. And when you go away from what you don't want towards what you do want, all of a sudden you see the possibilities. Therefore, I want my clients and my coachings to think big. What is the biggest dream you never had? Think impossible, because that's directing your attention towards it. And all of a sudden, you will see ways and possibilities to get you there. If you have an impossible dream, no one can tell you where to go because it's your dream. That's a place to come from, not a place to go to. And it is evolving inside of you because you are directing your mind. And therefore, my suggestion is find out what the life you love looks like. And then do this tiny step you can take today that brings you there. Because if you continue with these tiny steps, a tiny step is always possible. And sooner or later, you'll arrive there. I do coaching tours on to Kilimanjaro summit. And on my way up there, there is a certain point where I think I will never, ever make it to the summit. So if you ask, do you want to go to the summit? Yes, I do. Are you able to? No, I have no idea how to get there. But if you now ask me for the tiniest step, are you able to make one more step? Yes, I am. And after that, are you able to do one more step? Okay, one more step is possible. And if you just concentrate on that one more step, after certain hours, you're standing at the top of Africa. And that is amazing. And it's an amazing metaphor for life.
It is. And you did that. I've experienced it hiking too. It is a beautiful metaphor for life. Incredible. And you know what? I love leaving, you know, when we forget or we can't answer in the interview, it just shows how human we all are. And I love leaving those things in because your response to it was beautiful too, because we do anchor and you're in a different place, right now with this conversation. Mm. And for people just to realize that we're all imperfect and that we all have these, like, they're just little glitches, right? And just to put one step ahead again, and that's all you have to do. So I love that.
Yeah. I'm running regular, depending on which class it is, weekly or monthly mastermind, which is basically a group coaching, which is partially coaching by me, but most of them coached by the participants to each other. And yesterday we had a conversation where somebody was holding herself back. And she tried to do more of what she already tried. And I said, well, everything that you already know brought you here. So if you want to make it to another level, more of what brought you here won't get you there. you need to start thinking and acting different. So what is your weak point? And then we were talking about the weak point, and out of her weak point, I managed to draw out her secret power. And then she said, yeah, that's so beautiful. Our weaknesses are in fact our strengths, and our failures are our successes. And I realized, and I said that in the group, no, it's not. Actually, I don't want to be imperfect. I mean, I dream stable conversation with you and having no background noises at all and nailing every single aspect to the point. And I don't. And I'm not proud of this. I try to hide this. I try to sell a perfect image of myself. So I don't like the mistakes. But they are there. I personally believe, because everything has, like every medal has two sides. Everything you do, you can turn around. And if you look at it from a different aspect or from a different situation, it might turn into a negative. And therefore, it doesn't matter how perfect we are. As soon as we change the perspective, there might be negatives. And therefore, I am still allowed to learn to accept my imperfections. I'm not proud of them. But I know that they are there, and they are the price I have to pay for the perfect things in my life.
Right? It's just a journey. Yeah. But I love the way you're teaching to turn that around. I wish we had learned that as kids, you know, because we wouldn't have beat up on ourselves even half as much if someone had just told us that. So it's just golden. Let's go back into how our weaknesses are our superpower. What happened with this woman? What did she find? Can you share it, or is it, you know, too personal?
No, yeah. But let's talk about my weaknesses. Or if you want, let's talk about your weaknesses.
Well, let's start with you. I can share.
For example.
Time. Yeah.
For example. I wish I was perfect. And I have the tendency to not be perfect. A lot of times I do a job to 80%. And then my mind wanders off to something else. And I thought, being a coach, I need to be perfect. Because how can I teach somebody? How can I guide somebody else to living a better life when I don't? And when I quit whatever I'm doing before I'm 100% there. And I was allowed to learn that, on the other hand, this is one of my superpowers. My superpower is that I'm multi-talented, like a Swiss Army knife. I am good at a lot of things. I'm just not perfect at anything. I mean, I'm repairing my own boat. I'm repairing my own car. I'm raising my animals. I'm writing text. I'm writing books. I know communication. I know IT. Or if I look for sports, I was always, when I competed at school, I was always the fastest track racer. Except I was racing against a track racer. And I was always the most durable ultra distance runner, except I was competing against a long distance specialist. So, and I did a lot of different sports, but I was never the best. And then I realized now, because I did so many different things, I learned to see the world from a lot of different perspectives. And had I been perfect at something, being perfect at something or close to perfect doesn't come for free. It requires a lot of determination and a lot of time. And this comes with the price that you really suck at almost everything else. And I realized it makes me a much better coach, that I understand so many different aspects of life. All of a sudden, I don't have to tell somebody, this is how you do it. No, I have seen life from different perspectives. And all of a sudden, I can let somebody else be different. And I don't guide them to be as perfect as I am in that one thing I specialized in. No, I can draw out whatever they like.
Right.
And there goes my dog.
Is he okay?
Well, so talking about an imperfect life, just for our audience, right. To picture that. I'm sitting in a parking lot, and all the other people who live on their boats for the summer vacation, they go shopping. So they pass right in front of me with their food canisters and they're going back to the water. So this is not the perfect situation. And my dog, now that we, how long are we talking now? 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Now he thinks, now this is my place. And I have to tell if somebody else shows up.
Right? Totally. He's just doing his job.
Well, but this was the price for the two of us. Yeah. And this is the price for the two of us having this conversation. We try to schedule, we try to fit something into our schedule. And when we scheduled this, I knew that I was probably in Italy. And I thought, okay, well, then we're just going to deal with whatever situation we will find there. The other alternative would be not to have this wonderful conversation. So right? Everything we do in life comes with a price.
Yeah, but it's about being flexible, isn't it? Like, things don't always work the way we planned. And that makes life an adventure, too. Tell me what just being flexible. Tell me what you learned about running a safari in all of this. I suspect there's a gem there.
You mean participating on a safari myself or organizing one for guests?
So yeah, you organized one, right?
Well, I told you I'm an 80 percenter, which means I'm doing a lot of different things. So beside being a boat mechanic right now, because I'm working from the moment I wake up, I'm working on boats to get it ready for the season. I do my coaching business, and I run a call it an individual Africa experience company. So what we do is we organize travels to mainly Moroccan Sahara, Ethiopia, and Tanzania, and it's like a boutique. So we don't sell something. What we just have on offer. I'm asking people, what is it that you want to experience? What is it that you want to pay money for? And then I draw out of these people, what is their expectations? And what do they love paying money for? And then we organize this, because I have local partners that I trust 100%. In the certain areas, and they understand, I'm able to talk to them in a way that they understand me, and they are able to make their local partners deliver what the people expect. And therefore, I cannot say this is what a safari looks like. In general, you can say safari is a Swahili term. Swahili is the trade language in East Africa, which is spoken from partly in Somalia, through Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Burundi, Uganda, all the way down to Mozambique, and partially even to Congo. It has never been a language of its own. It was the trade language because the Indian and the Arab traders wanted to communicate with the local Bantu people. So they brought words from each language into that language into that common language. And when Tanzania became independent, the founder Nyerere, he made Swahili the national language because he didn't want to have a colonial language. And therefore, although it is spoken across the area, Tanzania is the only land which is primarily using Swahili. And there are quite a few words that people know. One is safari. Safari means the journey. So whatever you do when you are on a journey is you're on a safari. So whenever somebody leaves your home, you wish a safe journey, which is safari njema. Which is so funny because when people arrive and they want to go and see some lions, they do a journey. So what do the local people wish them? A safe safari. That's why we call it a safari in our language. And another word which is quite commonly known is Zimba. Maybe you have seen Lion King.
Yeah, yeah.
Zimba is the Swahili word for lion. And all is good. So if you ask somebody, how is it going? And they say, well, all is good. The Swahili term for that is Hakuna Matata. Which is funny, what one Disney movie can bring to the people. But they never explain that these are real words that actually exist.
Oh, beautiful. And yeah, and so it's a journey into nature, though. You really light up when you talk about this. So tell us more.
Yeah, and it is not only a journey into nature. It is something like a sneak preview of what nature could actually be like. Because these safari parks, the most difficult thing when making a photo of a lion is to make a photo without 20 other safari cars on it. There are so many people, there are so many cars. It feels to me a bit like Jurassic Park. You know, you're going on these roads and then you have these animals that you can see and that you can watch in Serengeti. But it feels, to me personally, it is ambivalent. So it has two sides again.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, it is stunning to see a live elephant. On the other hand, it is shocking to see that even in the last reserves, you can basically never see an elephant or a lion without at least several other human spectators. And to me, it shows that we occupy the whole entire world. And it shows to me that These were animals that used to live all over Africa and even further. And we killed them and took away their habitat. So for me personally, it has two sides of the story. It's not only nature. Nevertheless, I strongly recommend to do something like this. But even the northern reservations that you have in the US or in Europe, go there and look what our world is supposed to look like if we hadn't shaped it our way. And all of a sudden, these theoretical discussions about nature conservation, nature protection, and climate change become super real.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that there are animals that may not be not alive as a species in the next 10, 20, or 30 years.
Yeah.
One question. What do you think? What percentage of species have we lost worldwide in the last 50 years?
Mm-hmm. It makes me very sad. And, it's one of the reasons I haven't done such a trip is because I feel like I would be trespassing. And, even zoos make me really sad.
Zoos. I mean, to put these animals into a to lock them up is something fair to say. But you haven't answered the question. Do you know
I'm contemplating. Percent? Oh, is it like 30%?
70.
No.
Percent of all species went extinct in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
And when you realize that and you go to a place where they set up the nature conservation areas 50 years ago and the animals are still able to live their normal lives, so they coexist with the human species. They are doing a good job in Tanzania for the protection of these animals.
Mm-hmm.
Something for each one of us to take back home to say, yeah, it makes a difference it makes a difference how I treat this world.
Yeah. So, yeah. And what's your insights? Like, what do we need to do different?
Who am I to tell you what you need to do different?
just be it.
once again, ask yourself, in what kind of a world you want to live in. Imagine you could form it the way you want. What would it look like? And which species? I mean, even if you're afraid of spiders and snakes and whatsoever, which species would you say you want to be extinct? Probably none.
Yeah.
You may just say, well, they just need to have their own space. Well, if they need their own space, it means you need to let them some space.
Mm-hmm.
What is the world that you want to live in? How do you want to interact with others? Do you want to live a life that gives others, other human beings, other animals, other plants, the room to grow or not? And yeah. If it is so, what could you do today to go into that direction? How do you want to interact with your loved ones? And who do you want to be remembered for? Everything is changing and everything on earth will die sooner or later. So will you, Jane. So will I.
Yeah.
And when we go, do we leave the world in a better place, as a better place or as a worse place? It's your decision. And I remember one thing that I asked myself is, who do I want to be remembered for? And these gave me some values that I want to live up for, some behaviors that I want to have shown to other people so they remember me for that. And this gave me stability on what it is that I want to do now. Because if I know who I want to have been one day, I can ask myself for everything I do now, does this lead me in the right direction? And this is it's a different way of thinking to myself 15 years ago being a headhunter. There it was, I thought I have to be already there. I was goal-driven. So what is it that I need to have, that I need to own, that I need to be, that I need to do now? And that left me completely confused and uncertain because I couldn't do all at once. But when I changed that thinking process and said, what is the person that I want to be remembered for? I have a very clear idea. And I don't have to be that now. I just have to ask myself, is what I'm doing now bringing me in the right direction? Yes or no? And if I add enough yeses, it eventually will lead there that people will remember me exactly for that.
Beautiful. You know, I think that's what often changes my life too. And I love what you're saying. And the change starts within each of us, doesn't it? How we interact and what our truth is in our heart, and just making those small changes every day. And there is no savior. We are the ones.
Yes, and it doesn't matter what you do. You are always causing change. Even if you try to keep everything the same, you are causing change. Because if you want to keep everything as it is, then you keep buying products that harm other people, you are burning fossil fuels, you are maybe annoying your partner or your neighbor, whatever it is. If you decide that you want to keep everything as it is, you are still causing change to everything around you. So change is not a choice. As long as there is time, there is change. Because I mean, each second, all the molecules on the world, they keep moving. So the next second, they are somewhere else than they are now. As long as there are time, as long as there is time, and as long as there are living beings, or as long as there is life, there is change. You cannot, or you can negate it, but it's a fact. But what you can choose is, do you want to be a change, or do you want to have a change for the better or for the worse? Life is a choice. Life is formed by the actions you take. And you decide how you want to act.
Yeah. And there's a ripple, isn't there? So it affects everything.
Yeah, this is... Yesterday somebody said to me you are just mentioning poster quotes or calendar quotes. And this is one of these. Everything changes everything. And this is something which is so hard to believe, and it is so hard to understand, because I mean, what after we hang up, how does it affect you whether I go shopping or I go back to my boat or whether I go for a walk with my dog? And it's difficult to believe that whatever action I take, it will have any effect on you after we hang up. So therefore, I like to express it more simple and say, what is it that you want to have an effect on? And just focus on what is obvious. You are affecting the world directly around you. And there, take an active choice. And what happens later down the line is, either you believe it or you don't, or you understand it or you don't. But if you just change one thing for the better, I believe it's worth it.
I believe it's worth it. I love your message.
So now we are two.
And I think there's so many more. And I think there is simplicity in it, right? It's like people get lost in thinking that it's so big, they can't do anything. And then we get stuck. We don't make those changes. But it can be as simple as how you interact with your dog, or, you know, the hummingbird outside the front door, or the toad that's under the mat. Like, it all matters.
Or the way you think.
Mm-hmm.
This, well, another story out of life. Somebody, one of my coaches, she had a conversation with her business partner. It was a very difficult kind of conversation, and she thought through what is going wrong before the conversation, and then we had a talk. We prepared the talk, and I managed to make her stay with herself and say, what is it that you want? Who do you want to be in that conversation? How do you want to be recognized? Be the person you want to be and focus on yourself. By the way, this can be the biggest present for society as a whole. Not to think what you can do for society, but what is it that you can do? How can you be better? Because that will affect everybody around you. So what happened was that she came out of that conversation, she received what she wanted, and she said it was the best conversation she ever had with that person. Now, there was another conversation today, and she didn't prepare, and she fell into her old behavior. And she said it was a very unpleasant conversation. The other person didn't change at all. It was just her behavior. And her behavior is triggered by her thoughts. This is why I focus strongly on how people talk to each other. Because how they talk to each other is how they talk to themselves 24/7. And language is powerful. It can draw your attention to the negatives or to the positives. It can enable you or it can limit you. And by thinking different, you talk in your own head in a different way, and you're creating a different image of yourself, which leads to you behaving different to the outside world. And as you are giving a different input, your outside world will react different, which will create a loop, which is your senses is how you understand the world. Everything that you have in your head, all of your thoughts are not dealing with reality. Your thoughts are are dealing with the way that you remember things. And how do you bring things in your brain for the first thing is through your senses, how you view, how you hear, how you smell, how you taste, how your your taste in your mouth, and then how you feel things. This is creating an image of the world, and this is saved in your brain. And all your thoughts are not dealing with the actual world. They are dealing with the way that you saved it. So, and the senses, they create certain emotions, and the emotions lead to a certain way of remembering it. Now, when you start thinking different, you will talk different, you will behave different, you will create another reaction in the world, and all of a sudden, what you receive from the outside world will be different. That means you will trigger your senses in a different way, which will create different emotions, which will lead to a different way of remembering the real world outside. Therefore, by just talking different, you change your reality. Well, I hope that wasn't too complex for her.
Not at all. You're talking my language. I'm a homeopath. It's my heart, and why I love it so much is exactly what you're talking about, because our unconscious mind records everything through the five senses. And over time, we get programmed with circuits. And these programs can override how we look at the world, and they may make no sense, but it's like how we react to the world. And when you break the program, it's like taking a pair of glasses off and you see the world in a different way. And so we're talking exactly the same thing, only I loved how you described it. Loved it. So beautiful.
Huh. Wonderful.
Yeah. And then
please go ahead. Another one of these imperfections.
Right. But yes, the power we have within ourselves is the message that you're really coming, you're really bringing to people. And it's really beautiful.
Do you think that for your, or in this case, for our listeners, it could be interesting to offer an easy way to start that change?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we all connect and receive when it feels intuitively right. So yes, tell us your idea.
Well, so I'm not sure how our listeners what they really focus on, or how they believe, or how their belief system is structured. Well, this is not. No, I start with what it is not. So this is not just a belief. You can find neuroscientific research that is proving how we process the world and how it is saved. So take it for a fact that whatever is bothering you is just an image of the world, because you are receiving it only the very moment that you feel it or that you see it. But even then, it is already transferred through your body through electromagnetic signals. And once it receives your brain, it is already an image of the real world. And in the end, it is just, I mean, it's either a short-term memory or a long-term memory. And your brain does something that when you when you think about it, then you have the same image or metaphor in your head, but it is already not the real world. So when you want to change a problem, you are never changing the problem out there. You're first changing the way that you save it in your brain. And since this is already an image, so it is already a metaphor of what is really out there, you can give it another metaphor. So if there is something bothering you a lot, think of it sorrowfully. And then ask yourself, if this problem, or if this thought process, or if that person was a color, what color would it be? And let's say it's purple. Then imagine that whole scenery in that color purple. And then in your imagination, turn it to a color you love. So all you do is just say, if it had a color, what would it be? Which color would I prefer? Change your memory to that color. And that's it. You're giving the metaphor another metaphor. And by changing that metaphor, it's the ripple effect. You're changing everything down the line. Sounds woo-woo and spooky. It works.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's so simple. And when you change the color, your reaction to it changes, right? So the outcome is different.
Yes.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for this incredible conversation. Any last words of wisdom or gems? You've given up so many.
No, I just repeating what I already said. To let it sink in. You can't have enough of what you don't need in the first place. Material items as well as thoughts. So find out what you really love. And I mean really love. And then go for it.
Right? Simple. Thank you so much, Flo.
You're welcome. And I hope there were some nuggets in there. I'll think about that conversation, and maybe I'm going to add something that comes to my mind and record a short video, like just some 3 to 5 minutes. So for people who don't know what I look like, and I will give you the link, and it will be exclusively for your listeners. And it will probably, well, I will give you the link. It will probably be simplicityofhappiness.com/inconscious. And I will sit somewhere on my boat and give you a little bit extra, if you
want. Right? It's called the skinny. The skinny. When we need the reminder, people can just go listen to that 5 minutes, right? And see you, and it'll bring it all back. So we'll put that link in the show notes, and also your link to your website.
Yeah, it will be the only link that you need to provide, because it will be my website /inconscious, and then
perfect.
If somebody wants to look around for anything else, well, you're free to do so, or just look at the video. It's about you, not about me.
Okay. Love it. Thank you so much. And for everyone out there, don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. Spiral up, spiral out.